And in 3, 2, and 1. This week in Geek.
This Week in Geek, we discuss more movie lists, Exodia, and manga.
Hello, hello, everybody. Welcome to this episode of This Week in Geek. It's a shorter week this week. There wasn't a lot that really happened in terms of entertainment in the world. There's a lot of stuff that happens in the world, just not entertainment related. I don't know where to go from there. how you been, Kevin?
I've been okay. I reorganized my bookshelf and I dusted recently. It did take me quite a while and I did procrastinate like a good manga reader. Like I waited until like 2:30 to finally put my books on my shelf last night. So I finally got it like pretty nicely set up there. I do have a couple of series that I'm gonna sell so I can make room for new stuff. But that is just kind of what's going on the back shelf right now. I did end up getting a couple of box sets for myself. I found a good deal online, so the seller was local, so I ended up picking it up from them. But it was I had box set one of both Naruto and Bleach, but he was trying to sell off like the remaining bits of those series, so I was like, I'm gonna pick those up. And so now I have the entire series of Bleach and the entire series of Naruto. And I've never sat down and like read through them. I've watched like some here and there because that's like how it was when I was in middle school. I would just watch whatever happened to be on TV, but I'd never like truly sat down and like invested myself to watch like the entire thing in completion. And especially now with Bleach coming back with the Thousand Year Blood War arc, it's about time that I like finally read through it for myself. And if anything, I could consider it just like pre-work before the new MOBA comes out, hopefully later next year. So that's what we're looking at
now. When you try to sell your stuff, where do you usually go to do that, or to buy the stuff that people are selling that you might be looking for? Is it like Facebook Marketplace? Is there a specific website? Do you just like post listings or find friends who are looking for stuff?
Yeah, mostly it's Facebook Marketplace. You just go online and just ask like, hey, like, do you want this? And if not, like, I would leave it up there for probably about a month, and then if nothing happens completely, I would bite the bullet and probably go to like a Half Price Books and see what I can get from it. But I usually want to give it to like, I would usually want to sell it to somebody who is collecting it, because like I know some of the series are a little bit tougher to get in completion, so it's nicer to just have it available and ready to sell in that kind of capacity. But yeah, what else is going on? During the week, my dad's my dad's best man's brother works for Gamesbeat, which is a kind of like a, not a news reporting thing, but like they cover a lot of like gaming technology stuff. And my dad was like, hey, you're not doing much, do you want to help out on this event? And I'm like, I might as well, I don't have anything else going on. So I went and I volunteered at this event, pretty much just setting up and giving people like their badges and checking IDs and making sure that we're all good. But I was able to sit in on a couple of their talks where it was talking about the two that I sat through. The first one was the how is the metaverse doing? And how can we make it better?
Well, how is the metaverse doing?
They're like, metaverse, okay. Like, in short, the shortest way for me to describe it is metaverse is doing okay, but the only way to make it better is to the only way to make the metaverse better is to make it more accessible. So the price of a headset is super expensive, and that doesn't help with the Quest 3 as well, because like the Quest 3 is like probably like $500 or something like that. The Vives are like 800, and the Quest 2s were like the most affordable one at like $200 and $250 a piece. But that's still like $200, and most people can still think that the VR headset is used for playing games. And that is the main functionality of it. But at the same time, like there's a lot of stuff that they can do in the space that if it becomes more accessible for more people, I think more people would be on board with playing it and like giving it a shot and using it more as a social network rather than, you know, gaming only. There's a lot more you could do with the space.
Mm-hmm. Like it feels like it's prohibitively expensive sometimes to have to get all the equipment you need to actively use it. It's like why no one got 3D TVs, because you have to buy a 3D TV and you have to buy like all the glasses for everyone who's potentially going to be watching. Then you have to subscribe to 3D TV channels that specifically make 3D TVs, or buy a 3D DVD or Blu-ray player and then buy the 3D Blu-rays. There's just too much. There's too much periphery going on.
Yeah, I totally like agreed with that point, that it's expensive to try to go ahead and get to that point. And they need to make it more accessible for everybody, so that way more people can actually enjoy the stuff that's there. But yeah, there was that. And then I would also say, actually, the second panel that I sat in on was on the emotional intelligence of games, which is another really interesting discussion where, like, right now, most of the genre, like, if games were movie genres, right? Most of them are like action adventure, right?
Yeah, a good majority, I would say.
Yeah. But there are a few games that really tackle like romantic comedy or a lot of like outside kind of outside and different options that people would be looking at. So it's really cool to have them say like, hey, like also the platform that you release a game on determines what the main audience is going to look for. Too. So like if you don't, for example, like if you put a game on a PS5, a lot of like guys have PS5s because that's, we expect games, we play our games on the PS5, but it doesn't reach the female audience as well. Because they're not actively like getting PS5s all the time. So they were saying if you release it on a PC or iOS, it makes it a lot easier for them to access that way. But at the same time, like the difference then becomes like hardware wise, what can you provide, on this certain platform, you know, like you would only do so much that you can do with a PS5 that you can do with a phone, you know, without it, you know, starting to overheat or even burn. So a lot of people are looking into that as well. And I think that that's a really interesting discussion overall. It's like, what can you get out of these sort of things, you know?
Yeah.
But those are the two that I mainly sat through, and then I had to go. I went to my alma mater, hung out with a couple of people, and then had dinner. So that was a play. But yeah, Overall, it was a pretty good event. A lot of networking opportunities, a lot of people out there just to chat and figure out like what exactly they can do, and connections that they can make. So I thought that was pretty cool. It was cool to see some of the tech that people are talking about and seeing it in action here. But yeah, that's what I did this week. How about you? How was your week?
One could say it's been the worst week of my life. My dog died on Thursday. It was not his time to pass, but I was not watching him properly, and I got distracted by work, and he walked into the pool, and that was the end. So I have been crying nonstop since last Thursday. It's been great. And then on Sunday, we were supposed to have the last show of our play Monster Mash. And two of our actors got COVID, so we couldn't finish that. So hooray. It's been quite the week. I don't have COVID, thankfully. But it's not been a very good time. On top of also all the awful things happening in the world right now. So hooray. I'm glad you had a good week though and got to sit on a cool event.
Yeah, I mainly just walked around and handed out badges. What the first thing that they did was they told me like show up at 10:30, and I was like, okay, I showed up at 10:30, and then they're like, yeah, we have 600 badges. Could you alphabetize them? I'm like,
600 badges? That's a lot.
It's a lot of people. But yeah, we got it done right before the event started. So
lucky us.
It took us like literally up until 1 o'clock is like when they started letting people in. And I was like, yeah, I don't think I'm going to have enough time to get this 2D. So yeah, it was wild.
All right, so let's get into the news of the week. This first bit of news ties into why my week was awful, but the world's oldest dog, and again, my dog was also very old, but not this old. Sean was 2 months away from turning 20, so that was quite a shame. But the world's oldest dog, Bobby, is no longer the world's oldest dog. Bobby passed away on the 21st at the old age of 31 years and 163 days. The oldest dog, I think, who's ever lived, according to Guinness World Records. But yeah, it's the oldest dog in history. So, old dogs dying left and right, which is awful. I've been trying to cope by looking at, okay, I've you know what's really shitty, Kevin, and this was like just a really shitty coincidence. So yesterday was my first day back at work after it happened, right? Because I took Monday off. Mm-hmm. And I had to reset some passwords or whatever, or like change some security things on one of my work accounts. And then it asked me to pick a security question. And you know what the first security question to pop up was? What is the name of your favorite pet? So it's just like, okay, fuck you, universe. You didn't need to do me that dirty. I didn't need to start crying at 9 a.m., but here we are. So
could have made it a typical your mom's maiden name, but no.
No, it had to be like, what is the name of your favorite? Yeah, that's a dirty. So obviously I chose that question, but. Okay, so moving on. I guess let's just go into the list now. We do lists here at This Week in Geek. It's a part of our culture now because Facebook decreed that I have to see a new IGN list every week and be like, oh, this is interesting. Let's make Kevin guess every week.
Okay.
It's the Kevin guessing game time. So
I'm not good at these.
You actually get a, like, out of the top five, you get at least maybe two or three every single time. So that's pretty good. Like, I would never expect you to get all five every time, but sometimes you get like four at least.
I'm like
So
kind of
this
there.
list, yeah, you're getting better. As long as you get one, that's good. Because we're thinking a lot of these lists of all time. So this list is the 25 best monster movies of all time, which is different than the 25 best horror movies of all time, which we did last week. These are like specifically movies with like a monster or some creature or otherworldly being or presence in them. So what do you think are the top five monster movies, Kevin, or creature features, as one could say? Because that's really
Okay.
what they are, creature features, which is also a band.
They gotta have some sort of like creature in it. That is typically how it works.
Yes.
Let's see. What can we start with? What is like a, I mean, I feel like Frankenstein, Dracula are all like classics. I don't know if they'll put them in like the top ones. It's just another IGN monster movies of all time, right? Okay.
See, does it say their criteria? Monsters that were influential on the art form of cinema when they were released, featured a unique and memorable monster or monsters, and still pack a punch today.
Oh, pack a punch today. Okay. We will see what we have here then. I'm going to rep. I think we have to start with one of the better, or like one of the original like creature features. I think you have to go. I think Dracula's on the list, and I think Frankenstein's on the list. I think those are one and not maybe not one and two, but like they're on there somewhere.
Okay,
So
Frankenstein, Dracula.
I'm gonna put them on there. I think Alien deserves a
Okay.
spot on there, and by like response, possibly Predator.
Okay. So Frankenstein, Dracula, Alien, Predator.
How many? I'm just supposed to guess five. Top
Yeah.
five.
If you want to
Let's
go
put
for
the
10, you can.
nah. Let's just go. Okay. If we're guessing top five, I don't think I'd put Frankenstein or Dracula in there. I think they might be a little too low. I'm gonna put the original Kaiju in there. I think people might talk about like Godzilla being in the list. So I would put Godzilla King Kong. I think those are good. We have Alien. That's three. And then were we discussing horror films last
Yeah,
week?
last week was horror films.
Like we last week was just overall horror films. Okay. God, I'm trying to like
Which,
remember
of
what
course, there could
was.
be crossover here.
Yeah. I think oh, we have to put a Cronenberg film in there. It's either the Fly was kind of so is the Thing. Like both of those are like ones that make you like feel it, you know? It's just like
It's just, it's the body horror aspect of it.
yeah. So I'm gonna put God. Okay, you know what? We'll put both of them in there. Let's put the Thing and The Thing and the Fly. So, the Fly, the Thing, Alien, King Kong, Godzilla.
Fly, the Thing, Alien, King Kong, Godzilla. Out of those, which do you
Yeah.
think is number one?
People probably would go like, I feel like Alien has the biggest reach out of all of them, so I'm gonna put that one at my one.
Okay. All right. Let's take it from the top. So 25 best monster movies of all time. 25 is A Quiet Place.
Okay.
Because I don't know what they called them, but the those hearing things, monsters.
The ears.
Yeah. the Flappy Flaps. 24 is Little Shop of Horrors with the alien plant, Audrey 2.
Mm.
23 is Dracula from 1931. Number 22 is Let the Right One In. And this is like, I don't know if a lot of y'all have heard of this one, but it's a, is it Swedish or, yeah, it's a Swedish vampire movie. It's talked about in a lot of film classes, but I don't think outside of like European film buffs or people who read film aesthetics textbooks would really know this movie. 21 is The Wolfman from 1941. Number 20 is The Mummy, starring Brendan Fraser, Rachel Weisz, and Arnold Vosloo, which that's a fun movie. Number 19 is Slither from 2006, which I've never heard of, but it's got Nathan Fillion, Elizabeth Banks, Michael Rooker, Jenna Fisher, and it's by James Gunn. Number 18 is Cabin in the Woods, which features a lot of monsters.
Mm-hmm.
17 is Gremlins, which I would not have thought to put on this list, but it is absolutely a creature feature movie or a monster movie. Number 16 is The Blob from 1958. Number 15 is Candyman from 1992. 14 is Bram Stoker's Dracula from 1992, which is essentially, it's still Dracula, but it's a different telling. This is the one with Gary Oldman in it, which I haven't seen. I actually haven't even seen the original Dracula, but I own the movie. 13 is the 1933 version of King Kong.
Okay.
Number 12 is Cloverfield from 2008. I remember
that. Oh, yeah, Cloverfield. Solid, yeah.
That's like, I wonder if they're still going to continue the franchise.
Yeah.
Because they like every now and then they'll just surprise, here's another Cloverfield movie.
Yeah. Like you just don't know if it's coming, but if it does, you're just like, oh, okay, cool.
Oh, Cloverfield, might as well. 11 is Night of the Living Dead from 1968. Number 10 is Pan's Labyrinth from 2006. Number 9 is Bride of Frankenstein.
Okay.
Number 8 is Predator from 1987.
Okay.
7, An American Werewolf in London, 1981. 6 is Jurassic Park from 1993. I thought this one would be higher.
Jurassic Park, yeah. Oh, that's a good one.
It's like the quintessential modern like creature feature, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Number 5, all right, The Fly from 1986. So you got one already. Yep. Number 4, Gojira, Godzilla from 1954. Yay. This is the original Japanese version of
the classic of kaiju. Godzilla.
The kaiju. Number 3 is The Thing from 1982.
Oh, we're doing pretty good.
You got another one. Number 2 is Jaws from 1975.
Jaws, yeah.
And of course, number 1 is Alien.
Yay.
So what was that? Like, what was that, 4 out of 5 you got?
4 out of 5.
And you said you don't do well on these.
I thought I do okay. I didn't think I'd ace it, but all right. Yeah, we got close. I'll take it.
Pretty damn good, honestly. So on the topic of movies, continuing forward, SAG-AFTRA folks are not allowed to dress up any way they want this Halloween if you are part of SAG-AFTRA, which you are still on strike because the negotiations broke down last week. The actors said that the where was it last week? Well, negotiations have broken down. I think they're coming back to try to renegotiate again this week. But as it stands, the SAG-AFTRA current guidelines for how to dress up on Halloween are, and I'm just going to read this from the rules that were posted to the website. If you're looking for guidance on how to celebrate Halloween this year while also staying in solidarity with the TV theatrical streaming strike, you can choose costumes inspired by generalized characters and figures like a ghost, a zombie, a spider, etc., as opposed to being like a specific ghost, zombie, spider character. You don't post photos of costumes inspired by the struck content to social media. So like no character based by an IP. Dress up as characters from non-struck content like an animated TV show. Yeah. That if you're part of SAG-AFTRA, those are your rules. You've got limits on how you can enjoy the spooky season this year. But I get it. They're trying to show that show the studios and the producers that they need the actors more than the actors need them. And by having people not purchase their products in the form of costumes or to just not give any additional publicity to these franchises, it's hurting the wallet. It's hurting like their reach, the brand recognition that eventually turns into dollars, which is the only thing that these folks appear to pay attention to. Moving on to more Elon news. Kevin, if Elon Musk offered you $1 billion to change your name, would you do it?
A billion?
1 billion
How long do I have to keep it?
for a year, at least. Minimum, 1 year.
Do I get to screen the name first?
He's got a name that he wants you to change it to.
But like, do I know the name before I agree to
Yes.
the terms?
Yes, you do.
Okay.
It has to do with dicks, though.
Oh man.
Because it's Elon Musk, of course, it's got to be like some stupid troll thing that doesn't make any sense.
I'll be like
Like
Richard Velasid or something like that.
in this like a close approximation of it without giving it away too bad. It's if he wanted you to change your name to Dick Finn instead of Kevin, it'd be Dick Finn or Kev Dick, something like that.
Not for a billion. I don't think I could handle that for $1 billion for, well, if it's a billion for like a year and then I could change it back, I think that might be the play.
It's $1 billion.
$1 billion is $1 billion, actually. I might do it,
You could
and then
join the Billionaires Club and just tell
I'll
Elon
just
Musk to
hide
fuck
in a
himself.
corner. I'll just like keel over for a little bit and just hide in there.
At that point, you have $1 billion.
Yeah.
So the reason I'm asking this is because Elon Musk has offered the website Wikipedia, which we all know and love, $1 billion to change their name to Dickipedia.
A billion to change it to Dickipedia. That's a lot of, that's one, a lot of money, but also like, no.
Yeah. So, I mean, the owner of Wikipedia does not like Elon Musk. His name is Jimmy Wales, and he's said that several times that his website is not for sale. Elon said, "I will give them $1 billion if they change their name to Dickipedia. Please add that to the cow and poop emojis on my wiki page in the interest of accuracy." Elon said, "Have you ever wondered why the Wikimedia Foundation wants so much money? Because they're always asking for like donations to keep the website running. It certainly isn't needed to operate Wikipedia. You can literally fit a copy of the entire text onto your phone. So what's the money for? Inquiring minds want to know." And this is coming from the man who, as a joke, tried to buy Twitter and then got stuck with Twitter and doesn't know how to run Twitter, so he renamed it X and is just dicking around with it and literally ruined the website. So this is who we're talking about here. This is who's asking that question, a man who has no brain and no right to really question it. This is a man who just buys things that are already made and never makes anything for himself. So then people kind of did some fact checking, and they said that there are over 25 billion page views per month and over 44 million page edits a month, requiring substantial operating cost. The Wikipedia also employs third-party financial auditors who make public reports to show where and like the percentage of what funding is allocated to whatever operating costs or whatever that Wikipedia is doing. The operating costs to run the website and the organization in general that runs Wikipedia, which is the Wikimedia Foundation, it costs $146 million to run that per year, I believe. But yeah, on one hand, it's like that's $1 billion to take, but then again, you're giving Elon what he wants.
Yeah.
And on the other hand, you could just be like, "No, Elon, fuck you, go away." But then you'd lose
True.
$1 billion. I don't know if I would take it if it was me. If it was like me, that's $1 billion, dude.
It is $1 billion, but
Like
like
with that money, you
that's a
could run.
company. That's a whole company, though.
I know. But like, well, they could run pretty much for 10 years on that money. Almost 10 years.
Is it?
With us, we could like live our entire lives on that money. But
Yeah. Is it just literally changing the W to a D, or is it like it has to spell it?
DICKI.
Oh my.
DICKIPEDIA. Dickipedia. God, the dick jokes. Elon's such a. He's such a child in the worst way. It's not like he has the childlike wonder. No, he is the comedic sensibility of a like a fourth grader. And the world suffers for it because he has enough money to do stupid shit like this.
Yeah.
Last thing for me, Kevin, do you remember learning cursive?
Yes.
What
I
grade
think
did you learn cursive?
it
Because
was
we're both
fourth
we
grade.
you grew up in California, right? Okay. So you learned cursive in a specific singular grade, right? Have you used it much since?
No, it's I used it like the only time you really use cursive is to sign your name on something, but
Yeah.
that's about it.
I had a friend who like you wouldn't know it by looking at him. He just looked he was just an average white dude, right? You wouldn't know looking at him, but he had the most beautiful cursive I have ever seen. And whenever people would see him write, and like he wasn't like he wouldn't use it for special occasions, like he wrote like this on a day-to-day basis. Like his notes in class were in cursive. So like people would just look at his writing and like, why is this so beautiful? Why do you write cursive so well? But anyway, I remember learning cursive. I learned it in third grade, but my mom wanted me to know it beforehand. So the summer before third grade, she forced us to learn how to write cursive. And I have not really used it since outside of like, again, like you said, signing my name. However, in California, at least where you and I both are, a bill was signed into law on October 13th requiring that children between the eight grades of like first grade and sixth grade are going to be required to learn cursive at some point throughout those years. So it's not like how, again, you learned it in fourth grade, I learned it in third grade. No, it's throughout first grade and sixth grade, there will always be lessons in cursive. And so they are continuing to practice that skill throughout that 6 year period of time. According to the folks who wrote the bill, the primary goal is to give the students the ability to read and write cursive. One of the people who is behind the law, Assemblywoman Sharon Quirk Silva, who was a former public school educator, said that she was looking through historical records and noticed that most of them were written in cursive. Quote, a lot of the historical documents going back 2 or 3 decades are actually in cursive. I went on 23andMe looking for some family records, and they were all written in cursive. So I guess, I mean, I don't know how applicable that is today because everything's typed out on screens or printed out on paper. So historical records are more or less digitized or standardized so that anybody can read them. There's much less reliance on handwriting. But I mean, it's not a bad skill to have. It provides a little bit of dexterity and artisanship and fine motor skill, I suppose. But as of last year, I don't know if this is, I don't know if California was still a state that required cursive handwriting back in February 2022, or this kind of makes it mandatory. Because I mean, we both learned it, but I don't know if it was just because our schools opted to or because it was a requirement. But as of February 2022, the National Education Association says that 21 states required cursive in public school curriculum. So, I guess the kids are gonna be learning how to write all fancy now. So, hooray! I think this is a good thing. Anyway, that's it for me. Let's move on to your stuff, Kevin.
All right. So there are just a couple of like nerdy things that I will point out that happened this week. The first thing that got me the most giddy was Exodia. Exodia the Forbidden one of the oldest win conditions in Yu-Gi-Oh! Won multiple YCS events or won multiple games in YCS this weekend in Indianapolis. It was a 50 card deck. It's not something that is like normally used, and not something that you see often. I mean, Exodia the Forbidden one is a very rarely like used win condition. But it was a
Why
50
is
card
that?
deck. You need all five pieces in your hand, and you need to get them to your hand. So the fastest way, like the traditional way, how a lot of people used to play Exodia was like you would get the pieces by drawing it. So you would get a bunch of cards that allow you to just draw your deck as fast as you can to try to get the card to your hand. That was not the play from the guy who won this time around. He had a 50 card deck, which is a very interesting number because like 50 cards means, you know, more cards you have to get through in order to actually get to the piece that you need. Which is always like it's always another step that you have to worry about. And I didn't expect this to happen, you know? So he ends up running a lot of pieces that end up searching other cards, and that card searches another, and then so on and so forth until you eventually get to the piece that you need. And that is how they played that out. It was a very impressive, like, play overall. And I was like, yeah, this totally makes sense. This is a really cool and interesting way of playing out the deck and getting it to work. But yeah, Exodia the Forbidden One being used in a first turn like full setup board. And yeah, it was really interesting. If you guys do want to see the featured match where Exodia is played, just go on YouTube, type up like Exodia summoned at YCS, and you'll get the clip for sure.
Do you think
But
that
yeah.
now that people have seen it and that it's a viable strategy, I suppose, do you think people are going to use it, or is it just kind of a gimmick?
I think it was a gimmick. It's really tough to actually like get it to work completely. So, it takes a lot more time to set up than you would expect. So, yeah, that's why I have it kind of like written down here as like it's a very gimmicky deck, but it's also that element of surprise of not knowing how to deal with it, right? Like there are a bunch of different decks that you could possibly run in Yu-Gi-Oh, but you don't expect to run into an Exodia deck, especially at like one of the higher level competitions.
Yeah, because I mean, like, aren't there cards where you can like discard a card from somebody's hand or
Yeah.
something that would like destroy something in their hand? So like if you do that and he's holding one of the pieces of Exodia in his hand, like that kind of ruins the entire game, right, for that guy?
Yeah, it fully like derails the whole play for him. So,
Because your whole game at that point is based upon your ability to draw Exodia before your opponent can either catch on or do anything about it, right?
Yeah, that is the entire point. So it is a really risky play, but I mean, it happened this weekend, and that's not something that you get to see every day. So,
And you said this, and it happened multiple times, right?
it happened multiple times. Like we were lucky enough to see the matches happen live, like on the stream. So even the commentators were like, "There is like I have never seen a deck run Exodia in like 20 years," and I'm like, "Yeah, this is probably the last time I've seen like an Exodia like deck try to top an event." And it was round four, so both people were 3-0. And then he's like, "Yeah, I'm gonna." He does this whole combo, and you're like, oh, "Okay, he's going for this." And it's a bunch of like random pieces that supposedly work well together. And when you see it on paper, you're like, "This makes no sense." And then you see it in action, you're like, "Oh wait, maybe this does synergize." And then by the time that like it actually gets up and running, you're like, "Okay, now I understand why this is the reason why they played it." The deck list is online if you want to check out Jeff's playlist or like his deck list for the event. He did post it online, so if you do want to see what kind of weird stuff he was running, you can definitely do that. Moving from one childhood property to another, let's go ahead and talk about Pokemon. Specifically, let's talk about the one that tracks your sleep, Pokemon Sleep. Pokemon Sleep is having an event this weekend where if you guys are looking to get some more unique and interesting Pokemon, this is the weekend to do it. Heading into Halloween, there is going to be a higher increased chance to catch any Pokemon during any type of sleep, as well as a couple of like special event Pokemon. All ghost type Pokemon will show up a little bit more often. So mainly it's the Ghastly line. I think they're one of the few that's like actually in the game. So if you're looking for Ghastly, Gengar, and Haunter, Middle Evolution, you could go ahead and do that there. But also one of the more interesting pieces is a Pikachu with a witch hat. That is the only place where you can get it. So if you guys are into, Pokemon Sleep and want to get some unique stuff, go ahead and try it out there.
I have not tried that game at all just because I have no, I know my sleep schedule is awful and I don't have any more room on my phone.
I feel
I
that.
I know my sleep is bad. I don't want to know how bad it is, because then I'm going to feel like embarrassed for myself. It's like, we got to sleep more, buddy. We got to do it.
The thing that I like about, like, I play Pokemon Sleep every night and I keep track of like my sleep data. But it doesn't tell you like, oh, you almost died in your sleep. It's just like, yeah, politely, like, you did not get like the best rest tonight. Like you could, like it could have done better. Not that I'm able to change anything about it, but like, yeah, that's it. And I'm like, okay, cool, I guess. Thanks for letting me know. But yeah. Overall, just like it just lets you know, like, hey, it keeps, at least it keeps me on like a schedule of like not being on my phone super late at night. I only use it to just be like, okay, well, I'll put my phone to sleep. I'll just leave it over here so I don't get distracted. And I'll sleep whenever I want, because Snorlax cannot bind me to a sleep schedule.
See, I would think that it would like keep me up and using it, but I guess like it makes you, because if you want to actually get the most out of the game, you can't be on your phone.
Yeah, right? So that's the main thing. It's like I take it as not like Pokemon I have to fall asleep right now or else I'm not getting like my stuff like efficiently. It's more like I have to put the phone down so I don't like burn out my eyes, you know. That's the way how I look at it. Okay, let's move on from Pokemon news to manga news. There is a couple of things that I was like keeping my eye out for, and one of them is Blue Lock. If you guys know what Blue Lock is, it's been the big soccer manga that's been going around making the rounds. It recently, I think it was like the fastest to 1 million copies or 1 million issues worldwide. And so one of the cool things is the original holder of that title was the Attack on Titan artist. And he did a really cool piece, like congratulating him on fastest to 1 million. And it was just overall like a really cool like piece of art. But because of that, there are going to be a couple of special edition covers to commemorate the million sales mark, the fastest to 1 million sales mark. If you do want to get it, you're gonna have to go and find it on Books a Million. Is one of the retailers. It's just like another like big Barnes and Nobles kinds of shop. If you're looking for something like that, and the other one is Crunchyroll. So Crunchyroll online, They are the remnants of Right Stuff Anime. They have the copy for this. So if you are looking for that, go ahead and get it then. It will, like, they're all different depending on where you go. And then, like, the original one just has, like, the main character on it. This one will showcase a lot more of the players, even on the first cover. So, I am already getting, I'm already getting both of them because I like the series, and having multiple variation covers is really cool. So yeah. That's that for heads up news for the Blue Lock covers. So make sure if you want your variations, go get them.
How has Crunchyroll been doing with the takeover of Right Stuff?
That is a good question. Okay. As a consumer of the space, I think that it could do better. But I'm not really afraid of how, like, I know that they have the inventory, and I know that all they really did was take the Crunchyroll logo and slap it on the side of Right Stuff Anime. But the only thing that's, like, really different is the layout of the website. It does take me a little bit longer to go through everything and to, like, scrub through everything and see, like, okay, this is how this is supposed to operate, right? Like, this is where I could find, like, this manga at this price, and so on and so forth. So it does take me a little bit more time to get there, to go and find, like, certain series that I'm, like, constantly looking out for.
Mm-hmm.
But once it's, like, set and, like, ready to go, I think that as Crunchyroll continues to, like, take its time and, like, build out the website a little bit better, it should be another really good place to go for anime and manga. So I just think that they pulled the trigger too early, or pulled the plug on Right Stuff Anime a little bit too quickly without having the website be ready. But I think if we give it time, I mean, they have the same, like, inventory and everything, so I don't think that anything else is going to get, like, pushed too crazily out of the way. And yeah, that's what I have to say about that. I don't think that there's anything that's, like, ridiculously, like, broken or busted. So I think that we're actually in an okay spot. It's just going to take time.
Mm-hmm. It feels like, at least it sounds to me like they just wanted to beef up the Crunchyroll brand,
mm-hmm.
just by acquiring something that they knew already works.
Yeah, they're not really contributing too much to it. It's more of like, it worked, let's slap our name on it. But they just need to incorporate it better into their website, and then we'll all be set.
Mm. Well, at least there's hope. At least it's not like they've ruined everything.
Yeah, they haven't broken it. They just acquired it and now have to figure out how to make it work. All right. Once again, manga releases. This is it to wrap up everything that's been going on here. We have this week, we have Loser Ranger 7, The Boxer 4, Skip and Loafer 8, and the Promised Neverland box set that all came out on the 24th. So if you're looking to add on a full series, go ahead and do that. Moving into the next one, as for next week, there's only a couple of things that I wanted to keep in mind. The first one is Dress Up Darling 10. If you guys like that series, it hasn't, like, it was originally supposed to come out earlier in the month. It got delayed until the end of the month. So make sure to go ahead and pick it up. And I mean, if it's a manga about a cosplayer, like, it's kind of fitting that it comes out on Halloween.
Out of all the times to come out.
Yeah. Like, Halloween night is probably the coolest one to time it with. So yeah, that's exactly what's happening there. I have to get the list for what's coming out in what's coming out in November, because there are a couple of like really hot dates that we have to keep in mind, but I don't know if there's anything like crazy that I need to like add to the list immediately. So I'll be keeping tabs on everything for you guys, so don't worry about it.
Have you made it through the 10 books you bought last week yet? Are you still powering through?
No, I'm still getting through it. I've read a lot of them. And I like where, like, one of the biggest ones that I'm a fan of is Akane Banashi. I'm a big fan of Rakugo, which is it's an anime, or no, it's a traditional storytelling, like, art form where you have one performer on stage who's performing dialogue for all the characters. It's like a one-man show, but you have to do it complete while kneeling the entire time. So it's kind of a different form of storytelling, but it's a really cool way of like telling stories. And I was really excited to have another series about it, because one of the original series that I followed had that as one of the main things, and now it's become something bigger. So really excited to read more of that. That came out recently, so we have a little bit more to go off of now.
Is that really it for the week? Are we done?
That is it. Yeah, I don't think that we have much else to really cover.
It really was a short week in the world of entertainment. Damn.
Yeah.
So, any life advice for us, Kevin? Anything you want to add? How do we? I don't know how. Just for my personal, just because it's topical and sad for me. How did you in the face of, not to depress everybody, but in the face of losing a pet, how do you move on?
The best way is to like create a memorial for yourself, but not only for you to move on, but to also like, it's also helpful for your family too, to know like you're mm-hmm. not just like being like you're taking care of yourself, but you're also trying to like enjoy everything that's going on still. It's also to like honor their life too. Like my dog passed away, like I wouldn't say it, not recently, but like suddenly, that is probably the better word.
Yeah, I remember
he was literally
were...
just running around, and then he had like a heart attack and passed away. So that's when that happened. It, I know it takes a lot of time to like recoup and like get back in the right space, but I do think that if you take your time and you you know, really appreciate what the pet gave you over the course of your life, you'll gain a lot more out of it at the very end.
Okay, yeah, pet memorial would be nice. We are waiting on the veterinarian office to send us the paw prints that we ordered, because I guess not every vet will do it, and not every pet, I guess, treatment center, you can call it, will do that, but this one did. So we're doing that, and how I'm coping as best I can is that I am writing like in a journal every day and like consolidating my thoughts on the dog and thinking about a pupper. So yeah, that's how I've been coping. But if that's it for the week, thank you everybody for tuning in. Sorry to end it on a little bit of a sadder note, but I'm raw and fresh, so let me grieve a little bit, guys. But thank you for tuning in. Hopefully there'll be more stuff to talk about next week. Hopefully and you enjoyed another IGN list review from us. I think they're fun. I hope you like them. But thanks for tuning in, guys, and we will catch you soon. Adios.
Next week, we bring you the latest news and stories from around the internet.
Thanks for listening to this week's episode. If you like what you hear,
Please subscribe to us and rate us 5 stars on all your favorite podcast platforms. You can also follow us on all social media at TwigPod, that's TwigPod, and feel free to send us any questions, comments, or any suggestions of topics you'd like us to cover. If you'd like to advertise with our show, please contact our network at Bleav.com. Thanks for listening, and we'll catch you next week in Geek.